Good morning, one and all, and welcome to Arraignment Day Part Deux. We've got the second one, probably another one to come in August. It's like wrestling pay-per-views. Like before you know it, the next one's there. But anyway, we've got a lot going on. One of the first things that we've got going on is the presence of Benny Carollo. Benny, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going great. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. You know, we book these appearances like a week to 4 weeks in advance. You never know if you're gonna like hit the bingo of getting an arraignment day for your appearance. So we're very happy to have you here. That of course will be happening technically after our program, but that doesn't mean that there won't be stuff happening in the run up to it. We've already got a couple of instances of that, including some recent communiques from the accused that perhaps we'll be referencing. And in addition to all of that, and there's a lot going on with the arraignment, obviously, we've got Chris Christie coming out swinging in his first CNN town hall. That'll be fun. Gavin Newsom fighting with Sean Hannity. George Santos suddenly very worried about what's going on in the depths of space. That'll be fun. And a lot more besides, including if you stick around for the aftermath, and you definitely should, a deeper look into what it's like to work for Alex Jones, which is simultaneously crazy and also like, I guess exactly what ChatGPT would have predicted working for Alex Jones was like. And then Marjorie Greene saw a woman without pants and has a lot of feelings about it. And some fourth graders get accused of being trans athletes when they're totally not. So only the most fun news coming up in the aftermath. But anyway, way in advance of all of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great so the people know we're live and they can join in on this momentous day. But with all that said, Benny, are you ready to start this thing?
Heck yeah, let's go.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump right into it.
I just say not guilty. I didn't do anything wrong. Did nothing wrong. Presidential Records Act. It's not even a criminal event. There is no criminality here. It's ridiculous. And these people, look, they're using it. It's election interference. They're using it to get elected. They think that if they can damage somebody's reputation, they can do it. This is like Stalinist, whatever. This is the worst. Nobody ever thought this could happen in our country. And don't forget, I got more votes than any sitting president in history by a lot.
So yes, Donald Trump in one of his last media appearances before the arraignment says that he is going to plead not guilty. Not exactly a shocker there. Also not necessarily shocking that he did. You know, SNL has this guy who does their Trump impressions or whatever. And he does like a sequence of sketches where he just jumps from topic to topic to topic. I've never loved it as an impression of Donald Trump, but right there, that's basically what Trump was doing. It was like he had a list of his talking points that he needed to get to, and he also really needed to use the bathroom, so he was under some time constraints. I got the most votes, it's Stalinist, they're coming after me. Like he just ran through all of it. His heart didn't really seem to be in it right there. But it's a big day. It's a big day for Donald Trump. It's a big day for the country. I also think it's important for us to just pause for a second and take stock of where we're at. It's easy for Donald Trump to say, as he has about basically everything that's happened to America in the last decade, that nobody could have seen it coming. But like a decade ago, we probably wouldn't have been able to see it coming that we'd be where we're at. And some of the ways that manifests, I think, are pretty funny. I want to show you just a few seconds of Fox and Friends from this morning. Take a look.
But I don't think he'll have a mugshot because he's not somebody that is a, people think he's going to jet out of the country. I think he's going to stay and fight.
He does have a jet.
Eileen Cannon.
That is Fox and Friends, which is, like it or not, one of the most watched news shows in the world, having to like kind of jokingly debate whether the former president of the United States is going to go on the lam over the charges that he's facing. Benny, what do you think?
I mean, okay, first and foremost, like just even the idea that Donald Trump might go to jail at some point is on its face, like one of the just, it's deeply funny, right? Like at the end of the day, it is deeply, deeply funny. Even if you're one of the people that's kind of been frustrated by a lot of people like hyper fixating on like, oh, any day now Donald Trump's gonna go to jail. But like the whole like, oh, Donald Trump might go in the lamb. Like that's just like, it's just, everything about this is silly. It's funny. Like obviously Donald Trump committed these crimes. And like, I will say it is weird that this hasn't happened more. I mean, the United States isn't like short on corrupt politicians. It's just that Donald Trump really has taken the cake. Like in a country where it's notoriously difficult to get in trouble for any type of corruption or like really anything as an elected official, Donald Trump might actually get in trouble and face some sort of consequence. And so I guess congratulations, Donald Trump, you're number one here. Like
I know
the first, yeah.
The whole thing is wild. Like, I don't know if like I legally could do it, but I really am like, I'm motivated to write a movie. And the premise of it is Donald Trump has to like go to his sentencing and he decides, you know what, no. And so he hops like a small private jet to rural Italy and gets a job as a laborer on like an olive farm or something. And then in the style of a Forrest Gump, he just goes from like new life to new life across the world, learning and growing as he evades justice. I think there's something there. I might have to work on that. Maybe a novel, that might be easier. But anyway, the story that will be playing out today is that Donald Trump will be turning himself in. We don't think there's gonna be handcuffing or there's gonna be digital fingerprinting. We don't think there'll be a mugshot. Maybe there'll be going on the lam, we're not sure. Eileen Cannon, by the way, who is going to be overseeing the case until something changes, and we think it might, is not gonna be in charge of what happens today. Duty magistrate Judge Jonathan Goodman is gonna be overseeing this hearing. It's sort of an administrative thing. Christopher Michael Keese will be representing Trump, the former Florida Solicitor General. So they're saying that Donald Trump has not yet been able to secure new legal representation since his last team ran for the Hills. And look, a lot of people are taking that as an opportunity to like laugh at him, like that nobody will represent him. And I get that, feel free. But also, it definitely looks like that is a time wasting tactic. So Chris Christie had mentioned yesterday during his town hall that they have what's referred to as a rocket docket, which sounds mildly uncomfortable. But anyway, they have a thing in Florida where they do try to expedite cases to the extent that they can. Donald Trump has a lot of incentives to not play ball with that, to try to drag this thing out as much as possible, primarily for the possibility that he could someday pardon himself. But even if he doesn't do that, that he could interfere with things, or he could just pass away from like the accumulated filet of fish that's caking the inside of his arteries. Either way, he's gonna try to slow roll this thing. And saying like, oh boo hoo, I can't find a lawyer is definitely a way to do that. We might dive into some of the others later on this week. But do you have any expectations for how the arraignment will play out?
I honestly have no idea. I feel like with Donald Trump, like that's the thing. With Donald Trump, anything is possible. Like quite literally, like there have been so many instances where you think something's gonna happen and then it doesn't, or you don't expect anything to happen and all of a sudden it does. And so really Donald Trump is the ultimate wild card, especially Donald Trump in courts for some reason. So I don't know. I mean, fingers crossed, best case scenario. I mean, worst case scenario for us libs, right? You know, but Donald Trump, you know, nobody knows your situation better than you do. Maybe consider representing yourself. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It famously works well.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you need a little bit of help, you can get it from ChatGPT again. But I think he's a smart guy. He's got big brains. Anyway, yeah, I can't necessarily predict what is going to happen. I try not to pre-rule anything out. That is an adaptation I've had to make following January 6th because I did not expect January 6th to get as crazy as it did. I mean, I don't think a lot of people did. There were warnings, certainly, but it didn't seem likely. So I don't rule anything out. That said, will there be chaos at today's arraignment? Well, there already has been some, actually. Shockingly, there's already been a bomb threat. Here's a little bit of a footage of the bomb squad searching the area. So I don't know if they thought that perhaps there had been a bomb smuggled into the back of what looks like a TV, perhaps for the people who are waiting outside. But apparently, according to a reporter for MSNBC, press was being forced away from the scene shortly before 11 a.m. Tuesday. And so bomb threat was called in. It doesn't appear that there is an actual bomb. So far, just the threat. And so far, at least as of this morning, it looks like there are more reporters than there are Trump supporters there. Which I do want to pause for a second on that, Benny, because you really would think Donald Trump is being arraigned. According to QAnon and all that, this is the deep state trying to take down, like, you know, effectively Jesus or whatever. And yet they didn't really show up in Manhattan for the hush money payments arraignment. They're not really showing up, at least as of now, for this. Is this just that they think it's pointless? Like, they'll just, you know, keep their powder dry and show up later if it starts to get more serious? Is this an indication of lowering of support? It doesn't seem like that based on the polls. He still has a lock on the Republican base. Are they don't feel like they can trust him to protect them if they do riot because of what happened with January 6th? Why do you think it is that they're not showing up for him when he asked them to protest? And he did, by the way, earlier this week. He said, "See you in Miami on Tuesday." He was trying to encourage them to, but they're not really showing up.
Yeah, honestly, unironically, I think it's because they won't be able to sit and listen to Donald Trump talk about how much he hates trans people. Like, straight up, that's it. That's why people like Donald Trump, right? They're like these hateful people that get off on making other people like miserable, right? They just genuinely enjoy causing suffering. And every time that they're screaming in public about something and everybody else is uncomfortable or angry with them, they're like, "Ah, yes, I'm getting exactly the attention I want." Donald Trump getting arraigned is not an opportunity for that, right? There's the person suffering in that situation is Donald Trump, and these people want to follow a strong man, not this random weak guy that's like getting dragged into a courthouse to sit here and like cry about why he should be able to get away with federal crimes. So I honestly, I think that's why. I genuinely think that, like, to a lot of Trump supporters, Trump is more entertainment value than he is anything else.
But wouldn't, like, in theory, being there, I guess he doesn't talk, but that should be entertaining. And maybe if there was a big enough crowd, maybe he would stop and talk. Like, I feel like you would want to be a part of history and be there. Like, I don't know, it just seems so weird that they are so hyper obsessed with him and yet so disinterested when it comes to his direct request for them to show up on the streets. I don't know. Maybe it should give us a little bit of faith in democracy that people aren't so ready to constantly riot for him. I don't know. That said, despite the fact that not a lot of people are showing up ahead of the arraignment, Donald Trump does still have his defenders, and they are doing what they can, whatabouting as fast as they can. Here's Marjorie Greene.
Today, I'd like to announce that I'm writing an appropriations rider to defund Jack Smith's special counsel, his office, and the investigation. This is a weaponized government attempt to take down the top political enemy and leading presidential candidate of the United States, Donald J. Trump. We cannot allow the government to be weaponized for political purposes. I'd also like to ask all of my colleagues to join me in this effort. We have to use the power of appropriations to stop the weaponization of government, especially in light that we know that there are others who are guilty of true crimes. Never forget that former Secretary of State and Senator Hillary Clinton had classified documents on Anthony Weiner's laptop, who was convicted of sexting a minor inappropriate pictures. This is not how classified documents should be handled. There should have been an investigation done into that. Don't forget Joe Biden's documents that are sitting in his garage next to his Corvette where the door opens and closes.
Okay, the phrase "next to the garage where the door opens and closes" is never not gonna be funny to me. Like, yeah, doors can open and close. That is true, you've nailed it. But substantively, her attempted defense of Donald Trump is funny in a couple different ways. She cited a little bit of whataboutism that in her mind should, I guess, get Donald Trump off scot-free. So Hillary Clinton and Anthony Weiner, did she put a little bit of extra stank on the Weiner there? I feel like she did. But anyway, she said they should have been investigated. And I actually agree, they should have been investigated. Sorry, they were investigated. I don't know why she doesn't know that, because she pretends to be really interested in that. They were investigated. Oh, she doesn't explicitly say that Biden should be investigated for the garage where the door opens and closes, but He's being investigated right now. So all of what she is explicitly saying, as well as implying she would like to happen, has already happened or is happening right now. But that does not placate her literally at all. Because the point of whataboutism is not to establish the same harsh standard for everyone that's being cited. It's to distract from what's going on and to imply that there should be no standard, that nobody should actually face justice. That's what she's actually doing here. Benny, what do you think?
I don't know, John. Have you considered that those facts, that those investigations happened or are happening, is actually very inconvenient to Marjorie Taylor Greene's point and like Republicans' perception of reality? Like, you know, because that's really what it's all about. Who cares about reality anymore? Am I right? You know, you just Donald Trump's the main character, and so we should all just be these NPCs that he just goes through in life just to accomplish all these quests, right? But unironically, that's kind of how these Republicans think. Like, even like the slightest hint of fairness is like extreme inequality to them. It's extreme unfairness. I mean, these are the same people who literally like bullied Twitter into turning off their like Nazi filtering system, which is used in Germany, but nowhere else, because lo and behold, it would flag too many Republican elected officials. And so these people claim that they're being silenced while they're running around like dog whistling and saying like racist nonsense. So of course, when the legal system is like correctly applied to them, they're gonna kick and scream and pretend like it's the world's greatest injustice.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, like in terms of injustice, she's like the point of whataboutism is I'm gonna imply that there's other injustice. So let's just focus on that. So like I wish that I could like sit her down and ask her seriously. So you're saying that they mishandled the documents. Now I understand that you will not admit that Donald Trump did, but he did. So do you believe that Hillary Clinton should have been locked up for that? Do you believe that Biden should be locked up for that? I don't know honestly what she would say if she had to speak honestly, if she was hooked up to a polygraph or whatever. Because she doesn't want them to be locked up if that sets a standard where Trump would also be locked up for doing an even worse version of what she's saying they did. It's such a waste of time. But it is actually not necessarily the dumbest defense of Donald Trump from a prominent Republican that we've seen recently. I think Kevin McCarthy might actually win on that. Take a look at this.
Is that a good look for the former president to have boxes in a bathroom?
I don't know. Is it a good picture to have boxes in a garage that opens up all the time? A bathroom door locks.
Okay, so again, that's brainless whataboutism, but it's even more brainless than usual because there's at least two very big issues with what he said right there. So first of all, I'm gonna blow his mind and maybe increase his home security by pointing out to him that, did you know garages can lock, Kevin McCarthy? You should look into it for your own garage perhaps. In fact, if there's any petty thieves in the area around Kevin McCarthy's house, they might wanna just pull up his garage door because apparently he's never been securing it. And by the way, Biden has specifically said that the Corvette is in a locked garage, so it's not like it's sitting on the street. By the way, you can still have an issue with it regardless. Whatever minor documents Biden had there that he willingly gave back without a raid, they shouldn't have been there in the first place. You could have a problem with that. But the garage door part of that, Benny, isn't even the biggest problem. His defense of Trump having many boxes in a bathroom is that bathrooms can lock. But as many people probably have already gotten to mentally, and Miles Dyer points out, yeah, from the inside. So I suppose when you're sitting on the can and reading about plans to invade Madagascar, yes, you can lock the door and you'll probably want to because nobody wants to accidentally barge in on that. But how are you gonna lock it when you're outside of the bathroom? What bathroom locks from the outside? And is he implying that they routinely lock the bathrooms at Mar-a-Lago from the outside? That's not generally how bathrooms work in resorts. Benny, what do you think?
It's just so silly. Like, I love the idea of somebody like going to the bathroom, sitting there in front of like all the classified documents, being like, time for some casual reading, no big deal. What a convenient location for all of these secret documents. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's definitely more silly than the garage, right? Because it's like, oh, I got all these classified documents. What am I gonna do? I don't know. I guess I throw them in the garage. Definitely makes more sense than the bathroom. At least, like, I don't know if you're putting random stuff somewhere, but like, it does kind of say something, I think, about politicians in the United States, especially at that level. Just like the general sense of entitlement they have to like any degree of creature comfort without regard for their jobs or responsibility or anything. I guess it just kind of shows to me that like there's a lot of politicians who don't take this seriously, which I guess as somebody who has worked in politics, I can pretty much guarantee you a lot of them don't. Like, so I think that really, I guess, is the lesson here.
Yeah, I don't like them being in the garage either, but I think we can all agree that the bathroom is worse. I think we can all agree that, my God, Kevin McCarthy, who for decades was like, man, I got this lockdown, I'm gonna rise up the ladder of power, and then someday I'll get to pretend that I don't think it's weird that Donald Trump, the apprentice guy, is storing nuclear secrets in a bathroom. Look, nobody buys that. It's super weird to do that. And honestly, like just in terms of interpretation, if Biden puts some boxes in a bathroom, in a garage, it implies to me that he probably didn't know that there were classified documents in there. He was just storing stuff where you store excess stuff that you don't particularly care about, which is a garage. That's what you do. To store boxes in a bathroom, that does not imply that just you don't care. That implies that you've got so much stuff that you're storing that, like a hoarder, you just have to make do with the space that you have at that point. And it does not reflect well on him. Sorry, Kevin McCarthy, you're gonna have to do a little bit better than that. None of these defenses, by the way, mean anything in a courtroom setting. None of the whataboutism is going to matter when it comes time to do the actual trial. Apologies for that. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, Chris Christie had a town hall. We're gonna be breaking it down. He was actually pretty aggressive. So we're gonna show you some highlights after this. You people are a bunch of jerks. Anyway, moving out of our social break, why don't we take a little brief look at some of the highlights from last night's Chris Christie town hall, starting off with this.
He hasn't won a damn thing since 2016. Three-time loser. 2018, we lost the House. 2020, we lost the White House. We lost the United States Senate a couple of weeks later in 2021. And in 2022, we lost two more governorships, another Senate seat, and barely took the House of Representatives when Joe Biden had the most incompetent first 2 years I've ever seen in my life. Loser, loser, loser. Now we're getting going, it'll be different this time. Why? Why will it be different this time? Those arguments need to be made, and I'm not afraid to make them.
He goes on to say there, because I'm not scared of Donald Trump and because it's the truth. So I thought in a rational world, that would be the part of this town hall that everyone remembers it for, that raises the profile of Chris Christie and does serious damage to Donald Trump. Then I woke up and I realized that we don't live in that world. But shouldn't it though, Benny? Like Chris Christie is not wrong. Donald Trump being a part of the GOP has not helped them in many elections and special elections. And I know that they have so many excuses for why it's not his fault. My God, no one in American history has ever gotten so many passes for constant predictable failure as Donald Trump. But why is that point not effective, or do you think that it might be?
I kind of think that it is to some people. Like, so I think it is to specific people within the Republican Party. But the Republican Party is like incredibly divided right now, where if you look at like the last election in like Michigan, for example, you'll see that Democrats got a trifecta specifically because Republicans couldn't stop hyperfixating on going after trans children, right? And it turns out that's unpopular, right? Like making your entire political platform just hating trans people just literally does not work. And so when you take in things like this, you take in the relationship with Donald Trump and the Republican Party, there's a chunk of the Republican Party that is just like completely desperate, like bloodthirsty, like all they wanna do is just scorched earth and just be the most horrific people that they possibly can. And then there's like the other part of the Republican Party that wants to just make money and wants to win. And right now, they're quiet, right? They're being really, really quiet about the reality of Donald Trump, the reality of all this anti-trans nonsense and how Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot. But so I think what we're seeing right now is really is like the most like unhinged part of the Republican Party is just the loudest, and they're dominating all of the airwaves. When ultimately, I think there's like a pretty decent chunk of the Republican Party that's just kind of over it. And I think that's who Chris Christie is speaking to in the moment.
Yeah, maybe. I know that I obviously do not speak for Republicans. I barely speak for anyone, even myself. But watching the town hall, I just thought, like, if Republicans were not insane, they would just go for this guy. Because he's going to give them the tax cuts and the deregulation that they want. Economically, he's going to have a very similar agenda. You know, there was even some xenophobia against China. He might keep the tariffs. Like, economically, it's going to be very similar. But he's not going to turn off so many independents with the constant culture war stuff that wins you Republican primaries, but it can't be demonstrated any more than it already has, does not win you general elections. And yet, Chris Christie, like, if we jump ahead to graphic 3, right now he's at 2%. Now, he just launched his presidency, but or his campaign, but he's been in American politics for quite a while. A lot of people know who he is. Will a town hall like this rise his numbers? I don't know. It's also possible that in that poll, at least the 19% that Ron DeSantis gets, that is not very good, man. That could be redistributed to one of these other contenders. Maybe Chris Christie gets to 20%. I just feel like it's not going to be much of a campaign with Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis, but Chris Christie, at least on some of these topics, could present a bit of an alternative. I don't know. And if Republicans are as sick of Donald Trump as you're saying, you would think that that would be appealing, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really the richer segment of the Republican Party that's just in it for the money, right? Like, because like there are a lot of folks who are like really rich. I'm talking like real rich, right? Not like your, you know, local car dealership owner, because those folks, they love Trump, right? But like, the really rich folks who are trying to make like real money, they just don't want to deal with Donald Trump's shenanigans. It just is a lot of work to constantly being like, oh yes, Mr. Trump, you're so smart, you're such a brilliant man. Oh, and just like to baby him, right? And so somebody like Chris Christie is more workable, like sort of like more willing to like play ball the way they want them to. Not necessarily the crowd pleaser, though, for a lot of the Republican Party. And so that's where I think kind of like a big part of the split is. And I think that's kind of where we saw that in Fox News a while ago. And just this real contention between like a lot of the money behind the party versus like the actual voters of the party. And I think if there's so many candidates running against Donald Trump, to me, that reads as them banking on Donald Trump being in jail, or this court stuff really bogging him down to the point where he just isn't able to campaign. And that kind of being the opener to the Republican Party saying goodbye to Donald Trump, which I think would crater the entire party.
Yeah, but honestly, long term, that might be a prerequisite to them eventually being able to win national elections, like legitimately win them by getting people to vote for them. In any event, let's go to a little bit more Chris Christie.
I mean, how do you beat someone if you won't talk about them? How do you beat them if you won't distinguish yourself from them? I think, like I said before, they're playing politics. The second one is some of them are afraid. They're afraid of him. Look what he does, right? I got a nickname now. I never got one all through 16. I got one now, which is really nice. Makes me feel even more important. I'm just telling you, I've known him for 22 years. The only thing he understands is force. The only thing he understands is coming right at him and making your case. And if these other candidates don't want to do it, the American people and Republican primary voters have to start to understand this. When did we get to the point where we're always blaming our adversaries for the weakness of our candidates? Oh, it's the Democrats' fault. It's DOJ's fault. It's this person's fault. It's the media's fault. How about it's his?
I think, again, look, that could have been delivered a little bit, you know, more strongly. I suppose, you know, I'm not the only one, I think, who noticed that despite some good lines. And I think what should be effective attacks, the audience was silent for Chris Christie. They did not do the thing that they did with Donald Trump, where they just carted in a bunch of his supporters, or maybe they weren't able to find them. Maybe they don't actually exist. I don't know. But it was crickets, even with effective attacks. Even the people who, like, there were a lot of DeSantis supporters in the room, and you would think, like, I'm not gonna vote for Chris Christie, but wouldn't it be great to have him attack Trump and take Trump down a notch? They weren't even cheering for this. But I think that he is right to point out that a lot of those people who were technically running against Donald Trump up until literally this morning weren't even willing to criticize him on this massive scandal. They're barely willing to acknowledge that he's in the race. They're like running as if they can just have their own little mini election that doesn't cross over with him. They never attack him. He hopefully leaves them alone. They sell a book or something and that's it. It's, I don't know, it needs to be pointed out more when candidacies are obviously not serious. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it really sounds right there that Chris Christie, rather than making the case against Trump, is making the case to make the case against Trump, if that makes sense. It really read like an invitation to get other Republicans to also jump in on attacking Trump, which I think is kind of why it had like a little bit of a softer reaction, because it did, like, obviously it stings, right? Donald Trump is a loser, 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 right? But also, it was couched very much in like, look, at the end of the day, we have to blame candidates for losing. Maybe it's just a bad candidate, and maybe that bad candidate is Donald Trump. And so maybe we open that door. And so that really feels like what he's doing is not even so much making the case against Donald Trump, but just like inviting people to do that for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. He also, by the way, he never like named names on the terrible candidates that Trump has brought in and propped up. He's not gonna do that. He's criticizing Trump, but he's not criticizing, you know, Herschel Walker and Carrie Lake and Dr. Oz and all the other people that didn't have to be candidates, if not potentially for Donald Trump. Also, by the way, I don't want you to like think that I think that Chris Christie's great or whatever. Chris Christie is willing to criticize Trump, and that's cool. He also, by the way, would not say basically anything about what he would do when it comes to abortion. He was dodging and dipping and weaving, and he didn't want to go on the record at all in that, which, if you're worried about your rights, is not reassuring. Similarly on guns, he wouldn't say anything about what he would do in terms of guns, so not the bold, courageous fighter on those topics that he's made himself out to be. And also, by the way, he said he would consider making changes to Social Security, including by cutting benefits to wealthy Americans, which you say to sound populist. The wealthiest Americans don't care about the loss of that money, but also raising the retirement age for younger Americans. So that sucks. No mention of raising taxes to pay for the continuation of these programs. Anderson Cooper had no follow-ups about raising taxes. It would have been avoided, or he just would have denied the possibility, but you at least have to ask the question, and Anderson Cooper would not do that. So on many of these topics, not great. And also, by the way, even in his criticism of Trump, and I'll end on this, like he started off the town hall by saying, it's gonna be a rerun of Trump, it's gonna be even worse because he's gonna be more mad. But like he pitched a future Trump presidency as being like a waste of time, or maybe he'll be rude, not damaging. Like to hear Chris Christie tell it, there's no real threat to Donald Trump becoming president. It's just not preferable. And I feel like if you're the guy who's gonna try to take him down, being unwilling to reckon with how different he is in terms of the effect he'll have on American governance, that's not the way to go. Any final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, on that front, it's pretty simple. And that's, I think, mostly because like, look, pretty much every Republican out there would make it illegal to be trans if they could, right? They're just not gonna say it in the same way that Donald Trump will say it, right? Because when you say it, then all of a sudden people like don't like you or something like that. It's a wild concept. Same thing goes with abortion and like a ton of other issues. It turns out Republican ideas are deeply unpopular. So instead of focusing on the differences of their ideas, they have to look at like the difference of how those ideas are presented. And that right there is pretty much 80% of every Republican primary.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. By the way, unless I missed it, there wasn't a question about any of that culture war stuff in terms of attacks on trans athletes or anything like that. I actually found that to be interesting that you didn't have a bunch of these Republican town hall people like trying to get him to attack Bud Light or something. Anyway, maybe they were just so disinterested in the audience that they didn't think to bring it up. With that said, let's move on to something different. A guy who is not technically running for president and swears he's not going to. Gavin Newsom on Sean Hannity. Take a look at this.
We're sanctuary state. You're going to take care of them. They should be happy.
Look, we'll deal with the car. I mean, come on. This is California.
I know it's California. Okay. I'm aware of where I am.
On this way, the fourth largest economy in the world. We can handle
of course you can.
Okay, I'm a border state. Ron DeSantis is not. I know he's desperate to get in on the action.
No, because a lot
he's
of people.
Belly flop. Donald Trump is going to clean his clock.
Is it fair that Joe Biden?
DeSantis will has belly flop. He will clean his clock. This is a stunt. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic.
I disagree. I think he did the right thing.
Oh my God. You know, it's easy to forget with Sean Hannity because he's been in media for so long and he recorded himself doing Krav Maga for a few minutes years ago and he still plays it on a weekly basis, that you'd be led to believe that he's strong or whatever. But that was not a very strong reaction to Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom was kind of steamrolling him. Like Gavin Newsom's claiming it's a stunt. It's obviously a stunt. And Sean Hannity's like, no, I don't think that it is. Yeah, first of all, you definitely think it is. You liking a stunt doesn't make it not a stunt, buddy. But I love that he thinks that he's got some sort of like amazing like counterpoint to Gavin Newsom. Like, oh, you say that you like immigrants, why don't you wanna have them? And Gavin Newsom doesn't like fall into the trap. He says, yeah, no, we'll take them. We can integrate them in. That doesn't make what DeSantis is doing awesome or moral or even legal. You can want to integrate immigrants into your community and still think that using them like they're pawns on an effing chessboard is deeply immoral. And for Sean Hannity, a guy who I'm sure considers himself a serious Christian, to talk about this topic, to talk about this stunt and have that little like S-eating grin on his face. These are human beings that are being used like cards in a deck by Ron DeSantis. So while I'm not like a huge fan of Gavin Newsom or whatever, I do like his stance on this, his willingness to attack Ron DeSantis. Last week, he was talking about the possibility of kidnapping charges. And I think that he got the better of Sean Hannity there. But Benny, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, aside from all the like my random issues with Gavin Newsom, I think you could do a lot better job in a million different ways. Like that is the way to deal with the Republicans, like fundamentally, because at the end of the day, they're like pathetic cowards. That's why they're Republicans, right? That's their whole political ideology is just wrapped up in like pathetic cowardice. So of course you have people like Ron DeSantis doing like these ridiculous stunts in public to try and show off how strong he is. And then you have people like, you know, Sean Hannity trying to like defend them and stuff like that. But no, steamrolling them is the correct answer, right? Call them losers, say what they're doing is like pathetic and like weaselly, you know, call them for what they are, right? We really need to get past this idea that politics in the United States is about some sort of marketplace of ideas or some sort of debate between, you know, intellectual rivals. No, it is a bunch of silly, clownish children who are deeply selfish and cowardly versus like, you know, some frustrating liberals, to be entirely honest, who really need to give up some of this capitalism stuff, but ultimately at least aren't trying to be malicious, you know, most of the time.
Most of the time, and they've been dragged to the right position gradually and way belatedly. That said, let's go to just a little bit more of this interaction. Take a look.
I think he's a man of decency and character. I'm really proud of the president. I'm proud of what he's accomplished.
Is he strong enough
years
to be president? That's what
strong
I'm
enough.
About.
Look what he just did to McCarthy. He ran into circles. Look at the vote card.
I didn't Kevin like just vote. Got, I wouldn't I mean, have voted for it.
Exactly. Kevin got played by the president of the United States. I'm for results. I'm for results.
I don't think the American the people day. Benefit. I like the plan that would have saved $4.8 trillion.
That was interesting because you'll notice that Sean Hannity went into that with Biden's brains are Swiss cheese. He can't do the job and came out of it like, I didn't like the deal. I would have done a different thing. He totally ran away from that position. I think it's a perfectly fine conversation to be had about whether Joe Biden has the mental wherewithal, let alone the energy to be an effective president, especially with the Republicans in control of the House. But Sean Hannity doesn't seem confident to actually make that case. Or at the very least, he was successfully distracted by Gavin Newsom, almost instantaneously by Gavin Newsom just saying, hey, squirrel, the debt deal. Sean Hannity was immediately off of it. And I think, I don't know if it's that Gavin Newsom is a particularly effective debater, you know, for this form of debate, or just that, like, you gotta remember that Sean Hannity does not do oppositional interviews very often. It's just not his style and he seems very ill-equipped for it. I don't know if Gavin Newsom would be as effective, you know, against a Republican candidate on a debate stage or whatever, but he just rolled Sean Hannity. I almost felt bad for the guy. Any final thoughts?
No, yeah, I mean, like, honestly, you know, I mean, at least as far as the argument about like, oh, is Donald Trump well, or is Joe Biden well? It kind of doesn't matter, right? He's the president of the United States. His staff is doing most of the work anyway, which is like an unfortunate reality that like we don't expect presidents to really be hands-on. And the only president that has been hands-on recently is Donald Trump, who's been very much breaking things. But like all of that said, like, yeah, Gavin Newsom did a pretty good job of like just kind of like steamrolling through Sean Hannity, and Sean Hannity just kind of like folded in that instance, which is, yeah, I guess, a little cathartic to see.
I don't mind after all the damage he's done. Anyway, with that said, we do have to take our second break of the hour, but much more to come. Don't go anywhere. Okay, everybody, let's jump into a little bit of fun, I suppose, starting with this.
Hi guys, Congressman George Santos here. I like space, and I like to think that humans are not the only form of intelligent life the universe has to offer. Anyways, I have a bone to pick with President Biden and the DOD. After recent reports coming from former intelligence officers and a whistleblower that say the US government has recovered parts, and I quote, of exotic origin, non-human intelligence, whether extraterrestrial or unknown origin, based on the vehicle's morphology and material science testing and the possession of unique atomic arrangements and radiological signatures. That's a whole lot of scientific talk to say that whatever we may have recovered is not from this planet.
George Santos is a legitimately bad guy, but I do love how excited about space he is. He's really interested in all this UFO stuff that's going around. But you know, after the lead-in, I do want to give you, he has serious questions, jokes aside, about whether the US has been developing weapons with like flying saucer parts for decades. Here he is making the case.
So that we're, what are your thoughts? Does the US government possess this technology? And if so, why are they hiding it? Or perhaps they're not, maybe it's already in your iPhone and responsible for the crazy leaps in microchip R&D over the last few decades? Maybe we'll never know. But I will still call on the president and the DOD to declassify this information. The American people deserve to know the truth, Mr. President.
I thought when I first saw that, thank you for the sidebar. I thought that the truth is out there thing was added by Patriot Takes. No, he did it. So let's be very clear that this is yet another attempt to distract from everything that's going on by George Santos. As long as we understand that, we can have some fun and talk about it. But he is definitely trying to distract us. Benny, what do you think? Oh my God, the damn.
I mean, this seems like to me just him angling for his future career on YouTube. Like, cause he like,
yes,
he was doing the YouTube voice. He was literally doing the mid-tier YouTuber YouTube voice and cadence and everything. And he's like, perhaps the government has aliens and we don't know about it. Like, come on, this is just like mid-tier YouTube comment. Like,
what is going on in this B-roll?
Oh my God. But like, I don't know. Oddly enough, I was talking about this with my boyfriend yesterday. No, I think they're aliens. They've maybe been to Earth, but like they're probably not super interesting. They're probably like grad students of like whatever alien university. And they're like, yeah, go study Earth for your thesis or something like that. It's not interesting, right? Like we are one planet of billions, okay? There's plenty of interesting stuff out there. So are there aliens? Probably. Is the government working with them to make microchips? Almost certainly no.
And what about our weapons is so advanced that this clearly must have come from Alpha Centauri. I wish there were aliens. I love sci-fi. I write sci-fi myself. I watch it and been reading it as long as I've been alive. But you know why I know that aliens have not visited Earth? Because that would be awesome. And we don't live in a world where awesome things are truly possible. Certainly not on a cosmic scale. But I want to close by agreeing as much as I've ever agreed with anything anyone has ever said on the show about the YouTube thing. He started the video saying, I'm George Santos and I like space, which sounds like the lead in to like a kid's YouTube channel about space where that's how every video starts. And then like, it even ended like a YouTube video. He wasn't sure what the call to action was supposed to be. So he was like, maybe we'll never know, but I'm still gonna ask Biden if he did it. Like you can script it, buddy. You can do a second take. Come on, digital footage is free. You can do as many as you want. Anyway, he is definitely trying to set himself up for like an Ancient Aliens type thing. It also had a little bit of like the TikTok vibe of just like making crazy blanket statements that have no evidence whatsoever about conspiracy theories, and then the video will get like 100 million views or whatever. So I think that he's also got a little bit of that youth thing. I think he can straddle the line between TikTok and YouTube. Anyway, with that said, why don't we move from the insane to the maybe positive? New York City this weekend announced a new minimum pay rate for app food delivery workers that could significantly raise the standard of living for people working in those services in New York City. So we know that they were already popular. Things like Uber Eats, DoorDash leading to the pandemic, they rose a ton during that period. In 2019, by the way, delivery accounted for about 7% of total US restaurant sales. They spiked in 2020. They're still higher than they were pre-COVID. There's 60,000 food delivery workers in Manhattan alone. So this is not a small thing that affects just a few people. This is many, many people. On average, they make about $7.09 an hour, which I don't know how you can live on that in an area like Manhattan. They're not necessarily living in Manhattan, but you can't live near there at $7.09. This new pay rate will eventually allow them to earn $19.96 an hour. It's going to more than double by July 12th, then increase again to nearly $20 an hour in April 2025. So it's going to be sort of phased in, and it will also then be adjusted annually for inflation. So you're not gonna be surprised to find out that the services, Uber Eats, DoorDash, hate this and are gonna fight back as hard as they can against it. But if you're one of these delivery workers, I mean, this is a potentially massive change to the amount of money that you're making. Benny, what do you make of it?
Yeah, this is absolutely huge, because like the unfortunate reality is this is the future of work, right? Giant companies found a really fun loophole, which is, oh, if somebody's technically an independent contractor, you can basically pay them nothing. Oh my goodness gracious. And so this should have been dealt with like 10 years ago. Like that really is the issue, is that anytime there's some sort of new innovation under capitalism to make people's lives more miserable and to like control them in one particular way, like to scrutinize their lives and put them under like an app that's like watching them all the time while they do their work. It always takes like decades of organizing work to bring us back to where we were just before that rolled out. And so it's cool that this is happening, right? And I think other places are also trying to do this as well. But also, it is really shameful that it took this long to happen. And I hope that the law is written broad enough that it applies to more than just food delivery services, because there's a heck of a lot of other companies that are doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, 100%. And I would also file under the same sort of rubric of it's really gonna come down to the details of they need to be on the lookout for this. If you pass this, you make it official, you then need to be watching year after year, talking to the actual workers to make sure that their experience is anything like what, you know, in the graphics that we've shown you, it's supposed to be. Because as of right now, the city is going to allow the delivery apps flexibility in how they pay the delivery workers the new minimum. So as long as workers make the minimum amount, apps can choose to pay them per trip, per hour worked, or through their own formula. They additionally will have to pay them for the time that they spend waiting for a trip and their trip time. So all that sounds good. And in theory, they've already gotten out ahead of like these services sort of gaming it to not pay them as much. They say you do have to end up making that amount, but also you cannot just, you can't just assume that they're going to be, you know, make good on this. You can't allow them to have too much control over arbitration if they're challenged by workers or by a group of workers. So I really hope that some of the politicians in New York who are making this happen are gonna be watching out for it, talking to the workers and ensuring that it works the way that it's supposed to. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think really at the end of the day, for stuff like this, there should be some sort of independent body that reviews all of their payroll data, because that's the only way to make sure that their formulas and algorithms are doing what they're saying they're doing.
Yeah, 100%. But anyway, love to see it. This is the sort of thing that in theory could start to spread. You know, more and more Americans are being forced into this sort of work. If that's gonna be the case, they should at least be paid for it. It's still difficult for a million different reasons, and the wear and tear on your car and all of that. You should at least be compensated fairly. Now, with that said, we are unfortunately out of time for the first hour of the show. Literally, as the motorcade arrives in Miami for Donald Trump to be arraigned. We'll see if we have some updates in the aftermath. Definitely on tomorrow's show, we're gonna have all the reactions to what happened. So I hope to see you all then. Benny and I will be back in the aftermath in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.